Summer is here, and the days are actually getting longer. Next on Principles and Policies.
Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And you know what? I hate to tell you this, but I think you're wrong, and here's why. I believe the longest day of the year, we're recording this on Thursday, the longest day of the year, I think, is Friday. This is Saturday, so I'm thinking the days start getting shorter today. If not today, then tomorrow.
Okay, well, in a geological and physics kind of sense,
yes,
the days are getting shorter. But in a political sense,
oh well,
the days are just going to keep getting longer and longer, longer and longer and longer
until November 2020.
Right, exactly. You know, they talk about a summer solstice, you know, where the longest day of the year. Well, no, the longest day of the year is usually the day before a major election when you can't get away from it. It's on your TV every 2 seconds. Your mailbox is stuffed. Your phone's ringing off the hook. And everybody and their brother has an opinion on why you should and shouldn't at the same time vote for and against each and every candidate or issue.
Well, one of the issues we've got is that the actual campaign against Donald Trump started just after election night in 2016.
Well,
so we've had nonstop campaigning against a specific candidate since late 2016, and there is a lot of fatigue that has set in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And honestly, Chuck, you know, if you really wanted to be a stickler, you could basically file Hatch Act complaints against pretty much every Democrat member of Congress in the Senate.
Probably.
Because they have been utilizing their official positions and times that they've been on the dais to specifically run the 2020 campaign for whoever becomes the Democrat nominee, which, as you and I have talked about in the past, is not a guarantee in any way, shape, or form to be the front runner.
Oh, no. Gosh, no. In fact, sitting here on Thursday afternoon, early Thursday afternoon, I'm seeing a story that could bring the whole thing down and, in fact, may have been designed this way. We've known about this for months, and it's been kept a pretty good secret. But that is the fact that one of the major news networks is preparing a story on Hunter Biden.
Mm-hmm. Who's the son, the surviving son of front runner candidate Joe Biden for the Democrats.
If I'm not mistaken, isn't there another son? Bo's the one that died.
Yeah, Bo died, and there's Hunter. I don't know if there's a third son or not. I don't believe there is.
But in any case, Hunter is a real interesting piece of work. He was thrown out of the military. He was caught with he turned in a car that had a crack pipe in it, a rental car that had a crack pipe in it, and some kind of paraphernalia from the DEA and some other government agency, and as kind of a get out of jail free card that he was driving around. He rented the car in Arizona, turned it into California. But that's not the real issue. Those are important issues. And again, it's the son of the vice presidential candidate, but not him, he himself. However, this thing, the vice president, former vice president, was vice president when some of this occurred.
Yes, he was.
And he's up to his eyebrows in it. And that is the fact that Hunter Biden has made serious connections with both China and the Ukraine.
And by serious connections, you mean
business.
He's made an awful lot of money on entities that the government officially is not supposed to be working with.
He flew to Ukraine on Air Force Two.
As an official delegate from the United States, for what purpose?
For the purpose of discussing some contracts.
Okay. Personal contracts?
Yeah, well, he ended up, let's just say he ended up in possession of some contract for some important entities that were all negotiated, and there is a controversy out there because Hunter was being investigated in the Ukraine for illegal activities in connection with these contracts. And the Vice President of the United States sort of put the fix in and got the prosecutor who was looking into it fired. So what's happening? What's happening is that a major news network is preparing to do a story on this. And that, by the way, the Ukrainian prosecutor says, no doubt Biden forced me out to protect his son.
So in other words, what you're getting at, Chuck, is that the vice presidency, the old adage that the vice presidency isn't worth a warm bucket of spit, basically is not accurate if it means that you can help advance your family members' financial status through utilizing your offices to make problems go away for deals that they're making potentially illegally.
Well, think about Al Gore, who basically turned being defeated in the presidential race, and a not particularly well thought of vice president into billions of dollars through the whole climate change fiasco.
Sure,
he's made millions. Pardon me, he has made billions, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. On green energy exchanges and all that stuff, that I think that's all collapsed at this point. It may still be in play, but nobody's playing ball with it. Where basically you could buy African green credits for your company if you were a polluter, quote unquote, a large CO2 producer.
But so how many credits does Swaziland have?
Yeah, a lot. Because the way it worked out was these undeveloped countries,
right,
instead of developing that, see, this is the dumb part. Instead of developing their own industries, they could sell their green credits to already developed industries. So what does that do to the people in Africa?
Keeps them in poverty.
It keeps them in poverty. Keeps them the subject of, well, we've got to continue to raise taxes so we can make more foreign aid payments. So, but coming back to the Biden family, it just stinks to high heaven, and it does look like a network is going to run a story. Joe's already dodging questions about shady foreign deals from reporters. This could spell the end of the Biden, if not candidacy, then leadership. Because Warren is already, Elizabeth, Hiawatha is already basically knocking on the door.
It very well could. It could definitely be a derailing factor, especially if it's revealed or it's at least plausible that Joe used the auspices of his position as Vice President of the United States in order to, intimidate a foreign country into getting into a deal with someone in his family who was profiting from it. There's a couple of different names for what that is, Chuck. Neither one of them are nice.
Yeah.
Both of them have legal sanctions behind them.
Well, there is nepotism, obviously, here. But it goes beyond nepotism. This is graft.
Graft, extortion, corrupt activity. I mean, if you think about it, if you're using your office and authority to force somebody to do something they don't want to do, we got a little thing in the U.S., and maybe we only use this domestically, called RICO laws.
Yeah.
Racketeering influence and corrupt organization laws, in other words, to stop them from basically creating cartels and special deals for certain industries or certain entities. And it sounds to me like this may be with the direction that this report may be going, is asking those tough questions. Did Joe Biden violate the laws of the United States in influencing a foreign country to enter into contracts that personally benefit or financially improve members of his own family?
Well, Hunter essentially has a $1.5 billion investment deal with the Chinese that he got at least it looks like he got through the auspices of having his dad pull the strings while he was vice president.
I believe those are those might actually rise to the level of invalidating a candidacy.
So, in other words, basically, Joe Biden has done everything that Donald Trump has been accused of doing, and yet no proof exists have actually happened. But there's lots of proof that Joe did these things. In fact, Joe Biden was very open. He stated in a speech that he got the prosecutor fired that was looking into his son in the Ukraine. I mean, I've heard it straight from his lips.
Well, Joe Biden has never been publicly known as someone who was, shall we say, a Mensa card holder.
Yeah.
So I can see him do it because he probably thinks that everything he did was perfectly normal. And you know what, Chuck? When you come up in a corrupt party who routinely do things that are otherwise illegal, but you approve it because it's helping with the larger narrative of making sure that, you know, you stay in power, you don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's a problem. As we see, you know, with the administration that he was part of, the Obama administration, it looks like there may be some chickens coming home to roost on the Obama administration.
Oh, absolutely.
As well.
Yeah, because it's becoming obvious that all the arrows are starting to point to the top on the use of phony documents, the lying to FISA courts. It's all starting to point back to the boss, that the boss, meaning Barack Obama, knew everything that was going on, was completely in the loop about the fact that presidential candidate and then president-elect was going to be railroaded on the entirety of the, you know, they were going to derail his presidency by lying and then having others swear to it.
Right.
And it's turning out now that I read an article today that talked about, you know, we know about some of the scope memos that Rosenstein wrote.
Yes.
Rod Rosenstein, who was the acting director of the FBI, wrote scope memos to Mueller. And we know there was one. And then it came to light that there was a second, which expanded the scope. And now it's come to light that there was a third that grossly overexpanded the scope based on more fake documents on Paul Manafort.
And well, imagine that.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to sit here and defend Paul Manafort. He's a bad player, and that's why Trump fired him. He didn't stay in the campaign very long because he is a bad player. He lied on a loan application about where monies came from, and he acted as an unregistered foreign agent. So what do you do when you find that out when you're a boss and you know what the federal law is? You fire them.
Well, that's the normal course of action.
And that's why Paul Manafort was unceremoniously tossed from the campaign. Now, what's going on with that? Well, since the federal government can't seem to get at Trump, because everything they've come up with so far has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt to have been fake as a $3 bill, essentially, what's happening, the state of New York has picked up the cudgel.
Yeah, so you have Bill de Blasio and Andrew Cuomo.
Andrew Cuomo and the attorney general is in New York. But the attorney general has basically said, well, since you can't get him, we will. And so what? They're also investigating Paul Manafort, who, like I said, was a bad player. But they're investigating him for other things. And in fact, in an attempt to get him to cooperate and perhaps do what Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, did and lie under oath, because that's becoming very clear that he also lied under oath about things he knew about Trump.
Right.
Because we know that because the time records don't match up. But they want Manafort to come forth with something, even if he has to make it up. And the way they're doing it is by essentially torturing him. They tried to send him to Rikers Island in New York City. Rikers Island is notoriously awful. It's for hardcores.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to send... They'd held him in solitary confinement for months, which, if you know anything about solitary, it's essentially torture. They put you in a room. You have a light on all the time. The light's always on. You're by yourself. And they let you out of the cage for an hour a day. Usually.
Yeah, it's 23 hours in and 1 hour out.
And, you know, it's buried deep in the bowels of the prison. And why? Well, they want him to capitulate and cough something up. They're trying some of this stuff on Roger Stone, too. And Roger Stone says, I've admired him because he says, I'm old and I could die in here. Fine. Kill me. See how that works out for you.
Well, I'm sure Paul Manafort doesn't want a Whitey Bulger moment.
No, he does not. So the fact is, these bad players, it's all starting to point back to King Barack.
Yeah, to the Obama administration, who basically had to have had some knowledge or involvement or direct approval.
Well, we know his Secretary of State knew, and that's Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely.
Because she was not unaware of what was being done with Christopher Steele as he was essentially forging documents to present to federal officials. And let's not forget something here. This was also a foreign intelligence operation. It looks like Australia was involved. England was involved. There seems to have been some involvement possibly with the Ukraine and with Russia, because Steele met with Russian agents, which mm-hmm. means that yes. Hillary colluded with Russia.
Well, yes, and there's this little thing about the Clinton Foundation, and I forgot what the number was about how much money the Russian government or Russian interests, Russian oligarchs, Russian corporate entities had funneled to the Clinton Foundation during the time that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State in the Obama administration. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of $150 million, if I remember correctly.
It was a huge amount, and then Bill Clinton got $500,000 in speaking fees.
Well, that was for one speech.
One speech.
That was one speech.
One speech. And now we need to, you know, if you don't remember what she was paid all the money for, the State Department had to sign off on a deal where Russia was buying a Canadian company that had contracts for 25% of America's uranium supply.
Yeah, and their contracts were with the U.S. government. Yeah.
With the U.S. government. And who ended up with them? Russia.
Of course.
So Russia, which has huge uranium reserves, now also has a big hunk of America's uranium reserves. It smells. We really dodged a bullet when we got rid of Hillary Clinton as a viable presidential offering.
Mm-hmm.
We really did. This is corrupt as anything, and she's still trying to make hay that he did this and he did that. No, lady, you did.
Well, you know, Chuck, that's one of the biggest deflections of a guilty mind, is to project your guilt onto somebody else and say that they did it. Honestly, I would love to hear some, shall we say, neutral psychologists or psychiatrists actually do a discussion on Hillary Clinton's mental state. Because I think a lot of the telltale signs are there of an inveterate and congenital liar.
Well, if you'll recall, that's not a new accusation. That goes back to when Bill Clinton was president of the United States 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
25. The term, and if you recall, people would go apoplectic when you'd make that accusation. But the fact is that she lies when the truth would do her better, and so did her husband.
Of course.
You know, if he'd come clean and said, yeah, I had an affair and blah, 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 conservatives would have been outraged. But what can you do? You know, I'm contrite. I don't do it anymore. Ha, ha, ha. Well, of course he does. And they're both grafters from Arkansas, and they were known as that when they were there. So, you know, if you recall, how did Bill Clinton sell himself? Hillary sold herself as a liberal's liberal.
Mm-hmm.
How did Bill sell himself to get the presidential nomination?
He was conservative.
He was a center right Democrat.
Yep.
The Democratic Leadership Council was the name.
Which is about as conservative as you can get as a Democrat.
Yeah, which isn't very. But nonetheless, he sold himself as a conservative Democrat to get elected. Did he govern as a centrist? Well, he ended up having to a little bit. Why? Because he had so muddied and bespoiled the waters that he had to.
Well, and I'll give you one name is the reason why he had to. Newt Gingrich.
Yes.
the Republican revolt that gave the House back to the Republicans forced Bill Clinton to have to put any kind of budget or any kind of policy proposal he wanted through a Republican controlled chamber instead of a Democrat controlled chamber. So, yeah, whether he wanted to or not, he started having to move toward being a centrist Democrat,
quote unquote,
rather than a center left to leftist Democrat. But there was no fetters upon his wife.
No, not at all. And if you remember, he put her in charge of getting socialized health care.
Oh yes, yeah. We all remember that. I mean, for those of us who are old enough to have been around, remember that whole push in relation to Hillary Care.
Well, that lumbering giant basically got about 10 feet off the ground and then crashed into flames on the tarmac, and taking all passengers with it. I mean, that was part of the reason that the Democrats lost the House in 94
mm-hmm.
to Gingrich. That, and if you remember the House banking scandal.
Yeah, well, the House banking scandal kind of enveloped both parties.
It did.
But again, it's very interesting, Chuck, if you think about it. What was the central feature of the Gingrich takeover? I mean, in other words, what did they do to get there?
Well, as the Democrats call it, the contract on America.
Yeah, the contract on America, or contract with America.
With America,
what Gingrich and company called it. What pretty much was the contract with America? It was, we're going to take control and we're going to get government out of your hair.
We're going to decentralize.
Did that happen?
Some of the seeds were planted, but it never went anywhere.
No, it never happened.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they did some radical expansions of things that were made everybody scratch their head and wonder if Newt Gingrich had fallen on his.
And the answer was, yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, okay.
I mean, I still don't, to this day, I don't trust Newt Gingrich. Yeah.
Really? The contract with America from the 90s, which ushered in a new generation of thinking, is very, very similar to President Trump's entire agenda of Make America Great Again, except for the fact that he means it. And he's taking the steps to implement the promises that he was making during the campaign, which is the one thing that Newt Gingrich never did. The contract with America was window dressing to get them into office, and then they abandoned all 10 planks
That's
of the
it.
Contract.
They went rhino.
They went completely rhino. Trump basically created the new contract with America with the Make America Great Again rubric that he's working with, and he has been systematically checking the boxes on fulfilling the campaign promises all the way, even with the fact that you mentioned early on in this conversation that the Democrats started attacking for 2020 basically the day after the election in 2016. Well, you know, Trump was pretty smart too, Chuck. We just this week, Trump had his campaign reelection kickoff in Orlando. Big, big deal. 20,000 seat auditorium that was packed to the gills, had 100,000 people wanting to get in. You know, the local paper of record there, the Orlando Sentinel, doing their darndest to basically act like a complete and utter waste of newsprint. puts out an editorial the day of his rally stating that if the election were held today, they would endorse anybody but Trump.
Yep.
And I kind of pushed back and I'm like, oh, so the Orlando Sentinel is saying that they would fully endorse David Duke for president. Or they would fully endorse segregationists for president. I mean, let's go down the list of
name a bad player.
Name a bad player in the U.S. Yeah. You know, and the Orlando Sentinel says if they ran and they were running against Trump, we'd endorse them. But what it gets right down to is everybody thinks that was so that Trump has now officially kicked off his reelection campaign. But they would be dead wrong. Trump officially kicked off his reelection on January the 20th, 2017, the day he was sworn into office his first term as president, because his people filed the necessary FEC paperwork to have him run for reelection in 2020, the day he took office.
Yeah, see, that's the beauty of it. He's known he was going to run for election. Meanwhile, the press is like, are you going to run? Are you going to run? Are you going to run?
Yeah, they've been all asking this question. We can talk him into retiring or getting out of here because we put so much pressure on him.
To show you how little legwork that the press is really willing to do to find out anything, that's a public filing.
It is. It is. Everybody knew it. But again, this is that situation where, you know, you have to try to bolster the Democrats in the idea that what they're doing is actually working. All this screaming about impeachment and the Mueller report and the Manafort blah 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 blah, Elliot Cohen, the whole nine yards, that all of this actually is having any kind of impact whatsoever on whether or not the president is going to try to continue to take the beating and jump in. Well, you know, Trump knew he was going to take a beating. He knew it.
He doesn't care. Yeah.
He doesn't care.
He's like any good boxer. He can take a punch, he rolls, and he analyzes how the punch came in, and he develops a counter strategy.
Absolutely. It kind of reminds me, I don't know if you've seen this, and maybe some of our listeners have seen this, maybe most of them have seen it, but you remember the modernized retelling of Sherlock Holmes with Robert Downey Jr.? That movie.
I think I saw a piece of it. Basically, in the movie,
you have a situation where when Downey's getting ready to get into an altercation with somebody, and of course his Sherlock Holmes is much more physical than the Basil Rathbone Sherlock was or any of the previous Sherlock Holmes characters. Maybe not the Benedict Cumberbatch one on the BBC, but then again, even more so than that.
Because that's a modern retelling.
That's a modern retelling. This was set more in the Victorian time period. It's like he has this second sight where he can analyze and know which way the opponent is going to come in for an attack, how to counter, what counter moves he's going to make, and how he basically completely destabilizes and destroys his opponent in the shortest amount of time possible. And so they have this thing where he's sitting there and like everything goes into slow motion. Da da da. Do this. Do that. Okay. Kid, break out. Take away. You know. Prognosis. He'll have full function again in 6 months, you know, and then it happens, you know.
Yeah,
Trump is like the Sherlock Holmes character. He's already thought out in his head all of the permutations that they can possibly throw at him, and he's letting them do it to set up his counter. Why do you think he didn't care about the Mueller report? Why do you think he doesn't care about the impeachment cries? Why do you think that, as I tell some of my political friends, when they get frustrated when he tweets something, just wait a couple of weeks and watch the other card hit the table.
Yes.
And when you realize that he's basically taken the hand from the Democrats with that other card drop, you'll understand why he dropped the cards in the order he dropped them in.
There were a couple of places where I said, this could be bad.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Why is he playing it this way? I'm like, I don't get it, I don't get it, I don't get it.
And then boom.
And then boom, I'm like, oh, my gosh, he really does know. It's not, nobody can stumble into something this many times in a row.
Nobody's that lucky. No, nobody's that lucky. This he has this intuitive gift for strategic engagement in relation to high-stakes issues. He wouldn't be a multi-billionaire developer and real estate magnate if he didn't.
Having pulled himself out of bankruptcy, at least twice?
Twice, if not three times, I think. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely incredible that whether it's Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or Pete Buttigieg or Beto O'Rourke or Kamala Harris or Cory Booker, or can I just keep going down the list?
You've named a bunch of people. Some of those are really think they have a chance, and some of them know that they're running for vice president.
And almost every one of them think they can outthink Trump.
And prove over and over and over again that they can.
That's impossible for them. Now, do I believe that there are smarter people out there than Donald Trump who could probably, you know, take him for a run? Yeah, I do. But do I believe those people are going to file to run for election against him? No, I don't. Because I certainly don't believe. And if you look at the previous Republican field, of which I supported a particular candidate who, at this point in time, given what has transpired with this president and his agenda, I am actually glad that Donald Trump won the election.
Listen, they would have steamrolled him by this time.
That would have he would have been out of office by now. Okay,
probably,
you know, it would have been a situation where that it, because again, the biggest leverage that the Democratic Party can come up with is the old Saul Alinsky model of driving, you know, ridicule and marginalization of your opponent and making it personal and attacking them personally and belittling them and driving everything in order to drive them to their knees. Their problem is they got handed a president who can play that game just as well as they can, as you can see from his tweets that make people cringe.
To tell you exactly what's happening with that, that tactic is being tried. But what's happening? What's happening is the fact that the places that are trying it, the worst, CNN, MSNBC, and the late night shows, you know, quote unquote comedy, you know, comedy shows.
Oh yeah, so like the Jon Stewarts of the world and Bill Maher's.
Jon Stewart retired for the simple reason that he didn't.
He wasn't funny.
Well, that's part of it, but he also was tired of it. But you look at Trevor Noah. Well, you can name the whole Samantha Bee.
All of whom are people I don't bother
to watch.
All
of whom are in the ratings basement.
Of course.
Nobody's watching. I mean, CNN has 600,000 viewers during their prime time.
That's because they're all too busy working, Chuck. Making money, growing businesses.
Yeah.
Enjoying not having to pay as many taxes to the federal government. Gee, I guess those were some of those planks of the Make America Great Again plan of Trump's that he's checked off in the box.
Well, for instance, CNN continues to lose viewers. They were down to 600,000 during their prime time. That's nobody. We live in a country with 335 million people.
It's true.
And there are 600,000 of them tuned in to CNN during their what's supposedly their prime watch time. Okay, what's wrong with this picture? The fact is
that they're still on air, but other than that.
And the only reason they're still on air is because who they're owned by. And they're willing to pump money, good money after bad. But that's only going to last so long. You and I were talking that our ex-governor, John Kasich, signed up for a gig on CNN. And what did it do for him? He thought this was going to be part of his road to run for president, you know, to knock Trump out at the convention and come in. He and John Hickenlooper would come in as a national unity party, blah, 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 blah. Oh, he took a job with CNN, the most hated network among hardcore conservatives.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right next to MSNBC.
I told you it was the only network that would hire. Felt comfortable being a anti-Trumper in.
That's right. That's right. But what I'm hearing is that they're even going further in the ratings dumper. So,
well, like you said, John Kasich's now part of the team.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But what's happening with that? The Saul Alinsky thing isn't working.
No, it's not.
I mean, Hollywood, what's happening in Hollywood? They have been slipping, sliding. People are not watching.
People are finally deciding that just because you can make a movie and act doesn't mean that you have any political acumen or any legitimate way of speaking into the average life of mom and pop middle America.
Yeah.
Trump has demystified the elite. That's yeah. exactly what he's done.
Yeah.
He has demystified the elite. Now they all just look like whining, petulant little prima donnas, and Trump looks like he's the grown-up in the room. And that's what is going to make him win re-election. I mean, come on. Alec Baldwin, bring it on. Alyssa Milano, keep doing it.
Keep going.
Come on. Every one of the also-rans and has-beens who used to be popular during the Obama administration in the entertainment world and who now people don't have the time of day for but are desperately trying to reinvent themselves.
Yeah.
Good luck.
You mentioned Alec Baldwin, who, by the way, I'm a fan of.
Have you ever seen The Shadow? You wouldn't be a fan anymore.
Well, I used to watch him on 30 Rock, and he did a wonderful job.
Only because Tina Fey was there.
I think she's funny, too, and I'm a big fan of her, even though she's a Trump hater as well. But I liked Alec Baldwin because he played a wonderful parody of himself, and it was a self-conscious parody.
And I'll give him bones.
He made fun of himself.
Yes.
Which means, you know, it's not all ego. Because he dug at his own worst weaknesses.
And then again, it's maybe a Rorschach test. Maybe it is ego. Yeah. That's the reason why he's doing
But he played him as he was supposedly a conservative. But if you paid attention, he was a rhino.
Yeah.
Which I found kind of interesting.
He was playing Mitt Romney.
Yeah. You have hit it very close to the nail on the head.
He was channeling Mitt Romney in that role.
Jack Donaghy, and he was head of
Jack four letters, Mitt four letters.
Yeah, that's
Donaghy,
right.
Romney, Donaghy. Yeah. It rhymes.
Yeah. The joke was that he was a president of microwave development and programming at NBC because he worked at GE because of NBC was owned by GE and it was an NBC show. And they got bought by Comcast, which they labeled Cabletown, and they made the boss of Cabletown this complete buffoon,
okay.
Right? So anyway, you had to watch the show. But he has come out, you know, he was doing a thing on Saturday Night Live, which, again, nobody watches.
I quit watching Saturday Night Live after
ago.
I hit my 20s.
I was going to say decades ago. Yeah. I think in the 80s sometime I quit watching. But the fact is, he was doing a bit where he was coming on regularly and playing Donald Trump. They put him in an orange wig and, you know, the whole thing, and he would emote. And he's basically come out and said, I'm not doing this anymore. I will no longer play Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live. Why? A, it's blowing up in his face, and B, it's driving people away.
Yeah.
Why? He's like, this is doing, we're essentially banging our head on a wall and drawing blood and not stopping.
Okay, what maybe he has come to the realization of is, if I keep doing this, I'm going to be helping him in his reelection effort.
I think that is exactly correct.
I think the word is starting to go out amongst the Hollywood elites that they need to go radio silent between now and the election, because if they don't, they are darn sure going to make sure that the middle America comes out and votes for Donald Trump. Yeah. But, Chuck, They can't help themselves.
They can't stop. This is okay. There was a similar phenomena among people on our side when Barack Obama was president.
Yeah,
there were people that you couldn't get to shut up, and they were, you know, the whole thing about the birth certificate and all this peripheral stuff. It's like somebody asked me, where do you think he was born? I said probably in Hawaii, and probably at home. Yeah. Which means a birth certificate, you have to apply for it, and he never applied for it. Do I think he was born in Kenya? No. And that was the dumb argument anyway. That wasn't the argument about what a natural-born citizen is.
Right.
We explained that over and over. If you go back in our archives, you can find shows where we talked about what a natural-born citizen is.
And what that definition means, yes.
Yeah, and it has to do with where your father was born.
Yes.
Or naturalized to. And his father was never a naturalized citizen of the United States. He was always a citizen of either Indonesia or Kenya, if not both. But the fact is that we could not get people to be rational. We attempted. It's like, drop this line. It's getting you nowhere. It's empowering the base on the other side. And it makes you look stupid. And by you looking stupid, if I have anything to do with you, it makes me look stupid.
Yes.
And are there people on this side of the thing that say stupid things? Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. Barry, I'm a little shocked. I'm shocked, but not really. There really is rampant racism out there.
Yes, there is.
The left is not wrong. However, it's on the left as well.
It's the equal opportunity offense.
Yes. That's right. But when I read things, it's like, he didn't do it because he was this color. He did it because he was corrupt, and that he used his color as a tool because that's what people do now.
Mm-hmm.
But
listen. People are wrong and get into trouble not because of ethnicity, skin color, reputation, parentage, background, ethnicity, whatever have you. It's because of the color of the sin in their heart.
Yes.
That's where, and we are all subject to that. You know, I just read a very interesting small article by our friend Dr. Joel McDermott on his Facebook page talking about the history of the Juneteenth celebration. And I found myself agreeing with him wholeheartedly. You know, we celebrate the 4th of July, but in that time frame, those of African descent had nothing to celebrate.
Yeah.
And so June 19th, which was just on Thursday.
Yeah, Juneteenth.
Wednesday. Yeah, on Wednesday is the recognition of the day that slavery was ended. Officially in this country.
Not in this country.
In England, that's right.
No, here's what it refers to.
Okay.
The word of the Emancipation Proclamation reached Texas on June 19th.
Okay. All right. That wasn't what I read, but okay.
Originally, it was a regional celebration that has expanded out because it became known on June 19th. That of 1860, let's see, the Emancipation Proclamation was in January of 63.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was June 19th that word reached.
Okay.
I'm going to have to read that article.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
I'm going on memory from what I read. I did a research thing years ago on Juneteenth.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in towns where Juneteenth was a big celebration.
And that's great. I'm sitting here as a Caucasian middle-aged male. I'm not threatened by an expression from an ethnic group of what they hold to be important to them in their life.
Absolutely.
And maybe they don't hold the same, you know, level of impetus of or fondness for certain dates that we hold, like the 4th of July.
Yes.
You know, again, they got a point, and that's fine. We all kid about Kwanzaa, but in certain cultures, that is something that's important to them in order to remember their own cultural heritage and their own roots.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly fine. I celebrate Orange Day.
There you go. Yeah. Let's see. March 15th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. As a Protestant, I celebrate Orange Day.
yeah. I mean, I've told people that. I said, my grandmother was Irish.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Did she, you know, all about the green and wearing the green and all? I go, dude.
No, she was
my
Irish
grandmother
Protestant.
Was Northern Ireland.
Northern Irish Protestant.
She was a Protestant, and she said, don't you dare wear
green
on March 15th.
Right.
You wear orange.
Take the pinching and don't wear the green.
That's right.
No, I get that.
She was an orangeman through and through. Although my grandmother didn't care about church in the slightest. But they were Protestants.
While the rest of the world celebrates Halloween, I celebrate Reformation Day.
Reformation Day, exactly.
Because that's important to me culturally, ethnically, religious, spiritual heritage wise, the day that Martin Luther nailed the 95 Theses on the church door in Wittenberg.
The Wittenberg door.
That is a watershed moment in religious liberty. And for me, there's very little more important than the recognition and defense of religious freedom. And so while many people go and they dress up in the costumes of their favorite superhero, or they paint their face up to look like, you know, one of the cast extras on The Walking Dead or whatever it might be, and go around begging for candy, I'm busy enjoying and you know, reading about the history and doing things. I think one of my Facebook posts is me at the Creation Museum display, where they have this big display that they did for the 500th anniversary of Luther standing there nailing the theses on the door. And I've got a picture of me pointing to the whole thing like, you know, hey, this is what it's all about. So,
yeah, I think it's important to bring in, since we are a biblically based program, one of the reasons that so many people who held to the inferiority of other races and all those other other than, and all races are guilty of this from time to time. The Japanese were infamous for thinking that Europeans were inferior. Chinese also thought Europeans were inferior. The Mongols thought Europeans were inferior. Africans, in many cases, thought Europeans were inferior. Blah blah blah. It goes all around. They thought they were God's chosen people, or whatever their whoever God was. But I want to bring up a quote, and I'm going to use the King James Version because I like it best.
That's this
particular quote, this passage. It's Acts 17:26, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation.
Mm-hmm.
We live in an age where we are becoming a melting pot world, which is fine with me. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. I've noticed on television there are a lot of mixed couples. They're showing a lot of mixed couples, and I'm like, sure. Somebody asked me what I thought about that, and I'm like, it's wonderful. It's past time.
I have no problem with that. I have mixed couples in my own family.
I was going to say, I had a guy who assumed I was a racist, and he goes, what are you going to do when your daughter brings home a black guy? And I said, it's already happened. Sorry. My daughter dated a couple guys who were
the way I look at
of
it,
color.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, if somebody asked me that question, I'd be looking at him like, well, I guess I would take the Martin Luther King approach. I don't judge them by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And if they are following the Lord, they love him, and they understand he's sovereign, and they also understand that it has to outwork through their lives into the lives of people they touch. I don't care if they have of African descent, of yeah. Indian descent, of Eurasian descent, of full Asian, Pacific Asian descent, of Eastern, Western, Central European descent, of Middle Eastern descent, or of, God help them, Heinz 57 descent like I am.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And like most of us are. What does it matter? Chuck, you know full well I worked and did an awful lot of sacrificial work in order to try to get a certain politician to become our governor a few years ago. Ken Blackwell.
Yeah.
Institutionalized racism is stronger among the well-to-do than it is among the poor and downtrodden. I saw it.
Oh, yeah.
Saw it when many, many who would consider themselves to be the paragons of enlightened thought went running away from their own party mate because they didn't want a black guy at the head of the party.
Isn't that it? I mean, here we are. That was in 2006.
Six.
Yeah. I still have my Ken Blackwell for governor t-shirts, by the way.
Absolutely.
I still wear those around.
Cool.
People are like, who's Ken Blackwell? I go, my, how time flies.
Yeah, 13 years, 13 goes years by ago. Too fast. Yeah.
I remember you and I did volunteer work down at the Ohio Republican Party in Columbus, and people would hang up on us.
Oh, absolutely.
And they would say things.
Yeah.
They would say things. Why are we running this black man? I'd been following Ken Blackwell's career. I lived in southern Indiana.
So you knew it was Mayor of Cincinnati, yeah.
And I watched Cincinnati TV. That was the closest TV. It was about 55 miles. But I watched it, and he was I can remember him as an up and rising in Cincinnati politics, and I said, that guy's going someplace. And I would listen to him talk, and I'm like, oh, that's wonderful. I thought it was marvelous. If I'd been a Cincinnatian, I'd voted for him.
Yeah,
I'm a little disturbed by some of the things that I'm seeing from both sides. And it is out there. Now, what people don't realize, and when I see it from the left, what kind of racism is it? It's anti-white racism.
Coming
especially from white people. And I'm like, you know, if you quit judging people and assuming, making assumptions based on color of skin, which is exactly what racism is, then it's amazing you begin to judge people based on what they say and do rather than what they look like.
Yes.
And, you know, so who's the real racist? You assume anyone who's white and conservative is a racist. And I assume that I want to hear what they say and do
right
before I make that determination. Because I know black people who don't judge me by the color of my skin and don't think I'm the white devil and don't think, there's lots of them. Lots and lots and lots. And there are others who make the assumption that if I'm white and he's black, then you hate me. I don't.
Well, you know, and it's the other thing too is, you know, if I'm in dialogue with someone of another ethnicity and they say that, you know, they're hesitant because I don't understand their culture, they're absolutely right. I don't have that experience.
Right.
But because I don't have an experience doesn't mean that you get to compartmentalize and box me over into a certain category of saying, because you don't understand me, then you hate me. And it's like, no, that's not the case. I don't have to understand your culture in all of its nuances to know that there are basic traits of humanity and propriety that we all need to follow. It doesn't matter. And we don't get a get out of jail free card or a pass based upon our struggles that we've had. And it's like all of us struggle in one way or another, whether it's internal, external, whether it's economic, social, you know, spiritual, whatever it is, we all struggle. Our struggles look different.
Right.
But does that make your struggle any less valid than my struggle? No. Does it make my struggle any less valid than your struggle? No, it doesn't.
No.
And so, you know, that whole idea of the of reverse racism, I believe, is, you know, is a prevalent thing.
And don't say that word, because there's no reverse racism, there's just racism.
Well, that's true. But in the general popular mind of racism only goes from white to black.
Right.
And then reverse is from, you know, minority to Caucasian. But it's all racism. You're right. It's there is no fine tuning of it or saying,
no,
that, well, you know, if that were just turned around the right way, it'd be okay. It's not. You know, the scripture reference is absolutely dead on. Because if you think about it, it didn't say, and he has made one blood of all races.
Nope.
There's only one race. It's the human race.
Exactly.
We have ethnicities that are different based upon cultural, regional, and genetic modifications or tweaks based upon where we migrate to. But we are nations that under Christ are all of one blood.
Well, think about this. This is the way. Now, I read it to you out of the King James. I'm going to read it to you again out of the English Standard Version.
Sure.
And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having
right.
determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place.
Yeah.
One man.
Yes.
Which means we all cousins.
Well, yes. I mean, we're all related if you go far enough back.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works.
And you can't be a Christian and not believe that, because if you reject that idea, which you have to do, by the way, to be a supremacist.
Yes, you do. You have to basically reject the Bible.
Yep. You have to reject the Bible to be a white supremacist, because if you read the mass of it, essentially it's a story of brown people.
Okay.
You know, and if you go to, for instance, like Answers in Genesis, they'll tell you flat out, So I saw one where someone asked the question, what color were Adam and Eve? As if this was going to be a big trip up. Because the pictures you got when you were kids, you know, they were white. And
lily
covered.
White. They're yeah. lily white, and or they both have like big afros if you look at it from various other publications,
and,
you know.
And they said, basically, they said, no, they were brown.
Yeah.
They were brown, and from that brown came all the colors, from deep, dark black to absolutely frighteningly ghost white.
Pale Norwegian white.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And it all came from that one brown couple.
Yeah.
And God built in the variations, and he built them in for a good reason.
Yes, he did.
That lily white color that northern people get is because we only got a few months out of the year to make vitamin D,
yeah,
among other
the
things.
Yeah, sunlight. And since we live in Ohio, you know, we have that much more of a problem, because I think we only get 68 sunny days a year. And this year, I think they're cutting that down by a third, because it's going to rain on about 20 some of those
yeah,
days.
Yeah, well, live in Michigan, the state that when they were doing satellite mapping of the United States, I think they had to make like 28 passes before they actually got enough pictures to put together a map from the satellite, because it was constantly under cloud cover. It's like that in Northern Europe too. You just look at a map, see how far north England is. But that being said, deeply black skin is a protection against the sun. You know, God knew that they were going to be getting a lot more sun. And if you look along the equatorial belt, people are darker.
Much darker.
It's a matter of fact, and it's a matter of God's grace. So, but that being said, you know, we have to drop this idea that somehow I'm taken aback that we are actually more racially divided now than we were before Barack Obama was president.
Yes.
And why? Because that racial,
it's called demagoguery.
Demagoguery, exactly. That racial cudgel was used to pound people. It brought racists on the white side out, because they said, look at all this is happening because black people are in control. And it brought out racists on the other side, because it was like, look, we're in power now we can lord it over the and we're not supposed to lord it over anybody, no matter what color we are. That's the whole point. We're supposed to love one another and not care about skin color. But they do come along with, you know, there are cultural things that come along with it. I mean, you know, a lot of white people have adopted a lot of great culture. Personally, I'm a rock and roller and blues man, and that didn't come out of white culture.
No, it didn't.
I love the blues, but I also love classical music. And, you know, that came out of Europe.
And I like bluegrass, but I know where that came from.
That's right. That's Scottish.
That's Scotch-Irish.
Scotch-Irish music, yeah. But that being said, you know, it's going to be an interesting few months. And the beauty of it is that Trump seems to be at least making some inroads with racial reconciliation, saying, look, it was like Ronald Reagan always said, rising tide raises all boats.
Correct.
We want you to succeed. Why are you still implanted in these places that won't let you succeed? Come out of it.
Yes.
Come out of it and be part of the economic prosperity. You know, I realize it's not that easy. It's a lot of hard work.
It is.
But it can be done. And I've known people of colors who have done it. And I applaud them for it, because in some cases they've had trouble getting loans and that kind of thing.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's hard to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I agree. It's very difficult, but it can be done. Well, guess what?
I think we've come to the end of another exciting episode.
That's right. We're out of time for this week.
Join us again next week for the next chapter in our serial.
That's right. What will happen to Barry and Chuck as they hang over the crevice? Yeah. Tune in next week. You know what we think, and now we want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And if you look, all the archives are up to date. So I'm hoping to keep it that way. And you can go back and listen to our shows when you know, go way, way, way back. Every episode we've ever done is on the website, principledpolicy.com. And we ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.